This is Paul Nobles from Eat to Perform, and I am here with our director of coaching here at Eat to Perform, Becky Avara. Becky, do you want to say hello to everyone?
Good morning, everybody. I'm glad you took the time out of your day to join us.
So we don't really have a lot of announcements right now. We will be having another hormone push. We're kind of working things a little bit differently with weight loss medication. So basically, if you sign up for hormones, everything's going to be running through the doctor just to make it all, easier for everybody. So just because it says hormones does not mean that there would not be weight loss medication available. So that will be happening on April 10th. And really super excited. Just so everybody knows, when we started this push, Becky definitely knows this. We did not think that, or I did not think that we would have a very large group. We've been kind of keeping it relatively small. And we are closing in on 300 and expect to get closer to 400 by the end of May. So that is blowing every expectation out of water. And what's most interesting is that the interest that people have is more on the hormone side than it is on the weight loss medication side, which I think is which is probably to be expected given the group that we have. And so the topic today that we're going to be covering, and go ahead and get any questions in the chat as soon as possible so that we can do the Q&A in an efficient manner. What I don't want to do is have all the questions come in late when we are trying to end the podcast. So if you can get those in early, that would be great. But if in the conversation that we're about to have, it stimulates more conversation, that's fine too. All right. We will likely we don't typically have a problem where questions go unanswered. So okay. So right now, here we are. I don't know when people will be listening to this, but we're at the end of March. We're getting to the point where a lot of people are finishing up their fat loss cycles and they're moving into AP. They probably have done one. Maybe they're starting to or going to be starting to relatively soon. What I wanted to do was walk through what the expectation is. As you start to get past these rounds, right? Because what happens for a lot of people is they don't know what to expect. The situation devolves into chaos. And I feel like if we can set you up a little bit better, your coach is going to do everything that they possibly can, but the mindset of what's about to happen, I think, is something that we need to walk through so that you can be set up for success going into the summer and beyond that. Okay, so one of the basic ideas of Eat to Perform is, and this is a little bit of a change from early on because a lot of people would ask me, and this is still true, a lot of people would ask me, hey, Paul, can I do Eat Perform and really never do fat loss? And I said, yes, of course you can. And a lot of that does depend on effort. So that's a factor. But the reality of the situation is that most people need cycles to do that, and even need cycles that sort of include what most people would consider to be maintenance, right? And so in our view, maintenance is what we call performance and recomp, where you might actually want to expect to gain a little bit of weight, but that's going to allow the process of muscle gain and really that look of being leaner over time. When you see like the progress pictures in the private group, what you really see is not just, I mean, because you'll see some people that are making like just amazing progress, and it doesn't make sense because, you know, they've only lost 15 to 20 pounds or something like that, but they look like they've lost 40. And the reason why they look like they lost 40 is because of resistance training or because of some of the cardio that they're doing that relates to effort, right? And so, if you've not spent a lot of time working on resistance training and holding on to muscle and building muscle, this is something that can make a big difference for you. And I would say that that's really the big difference between what we do and what a lot of programs that are just diet focused do, right? But it does require a mentality, right? Because I think that when you've had in your mindset, I need to lose 30 pounds, and you've had to lose that 30 pounds for so long, and you get close to that number, but you're kind of banging against this wall and there's really no more progress to be had and things of this nature. That's when you know you need a reset, and that's when you know that you need to move to calories becoming an ally. Now, does that mean that you have to work out like crazy to maintain your weight? Like I said, I think that having sort of a window, if you've lost, let's say, 20 pounds, you know, it should be a reasonable expectation that over the course of months, you would gain 5 pounds. What I think happens in the case of people regaining 10 to 15 pounds, there's two things that happen. One, their thought process related to food changes, and they're actually okay with it because they can see like the muscle they're building and things of this nature. And then there's the other part where just opening up that door, because they want to cling to that lowest number so much that when they open up the door, all of a sudden the bats come flying in, and everything just goes haywire. And there's really no reason for that to happen. And, you know, I've made the argument many times that black and white solutions just fail people, right? And when you want to stay at your lowest weight, that's a form of black and white solutions, right? So the real answer is sort of in the gray. And I just want to make sure that everybody understands that whether you're in AP or your PR, it's still a fat loss phase. You're still working on gaining muscle. Like Becky posted some great pictures in the private forum, one of the commenters gave her a great compliment in that, you know, she posted her weight and height and stuff like this, and the person said that, you know, there's no way she would have thought that Becky weighed that much. And it's because Becky goes through these long cycles where she's focused on muscle. She has muscle, right? She's had, you know, ever since I've known Becky, I believe you came from kind of a low carb background, right? And like the minute carbs started to come into the equation, you know, just like that softer look, you know, kind of went away. And then, you know, kind of all the muscle really started to show itself. Am I wrong in stating that, Becky?
No, you're completely right. I came from a paleo background and it was definitely low carb. And as I added in the carbs, I continued to weight train. I was weight training before that. But as I continued to weight train, then I saw my training volume increase. I started to really see the more muscle and things like that. Yes.
One of the things that's so interesting, right, is that there really is no more paleo, right? Nobody does a whole 30. I mean, I know that there's like recesses of the internet. There was that like took over the world for a while, right? And now it doesn't exist. And the reason why it doesn't exist is the same reason. So I was watching Shark Tank, and the woman actually said paleo friendly, which I hadn't heard paleo in so long. And she had this cookie, and the cookie, like one single cookie, because it was like nut based or whatever, one single cookie was 700 calories, right? And so the people are tasting the calories. And Mark Cuban, at one point, who has, been all over the map related to, various diets. He's been vegan, all these different things. He said the reason why he said I'm out, and the reason why I'm out is because, I'm focused on calories, and one cookie is 700 calories. And like literally everyone on the panel was like, whoa, we're supposed to be looking at calories, right? And everyone went out, she might have gotten a deal through Barbara, actually, now that I think about it. But this idea that making tasty treats with agave or whatever, people realized over time that the calories did matter. And now, of course, I mean, paleo, intermittent fasting, keto, nobody's none of that anymore, right? Everybody's really focused on weight loss medication at this point, unless you are calorie focused, which obviously still works. The whole weight loss medication thing is a bit absurd at this point, especially with some of the information, kind of misinformation that I think Oprah's putting out there. The reality of the situation is that people are eating less, and can you deal with the side effects and things of that nature? But it's just shocking that everyone is sort of moved, everyone moved from this to this to this. And I actually do think that the weight loss medication does have staying power. It's been interesting just talking to people that are on semaglutide versus tirzepatide, and what I think is probably coming next, which is better and better versions of this with fewer and fewer side effects, right? And so I've said this before on many other podcasts, I think that at least 50% of people, 5 years from now, no one will diet the way that we used to, right? But what I think is going to happen, and what I suspect is probably going to be the big thing moving forward, is people are going to realize the need for support. Because people are going to find that, yes, it's really effective, but all it's doing is suppressing your ability to eat a lot of calories, or eat a significant amount of calories. So when those calories come back once you're off the medication, and then there's a lot of people that try to scare people related to weight loss medication as if like you have to be on it forever. That may be true for diabetes or treatment of diabetes, but in terms of weight loss medication, I don't think that's going to end up being the way. Most people know that. I don't want to turn this into a weight loss medication podcast, but I think that that's interesting when we're talking about paleo and kind of low carbish types of way of eating. When you start to get to a point, we actually there is one competitor that I do help, and honestly, Becky's the one doing the great majority of coaching. And what's been really interesting watching his trajectory is that I mean, I don't think I've ever seen anyone more weight stable. I mean, he just stays at 88 kilograms, and he moves from 88.5. I think he had one day where he was like 89 kilograms. That's like 2.2 pounds of variance. And that's probably been over the course of 3 months now. So what's he doing, and why is it working so well? Well, he works out a lot. He owns a gym. If you want to get like really super jacked, the profit model is not particularly great. Own a gym, because it's really, really effective for that. Obviously, I'm kidding a little bit. There's a lot of great gym owners that do a great job, and they're supporting their families and communities and all this other type of stuff. But man, the gym is a really tough business to be in, especially now with this big transition, because most people that are working out, they're at least conscious of nutrition. And with kind of this transition in the diet industry, most of the gym owners that I'm talking to are realizing that they're being affected greatly. We certainly are, obviously having the ability to give it, but it's not a saving grace by any stretch of the imagination. There's just fewer and fewer people that want to do it the right way, even though we believe that people need support. I think that that's a message that is really only going to be heard 2, 3 years down the line, right? Right now, people are just like, I don't say this to be flip, but I tried to use it as a context so people understand that, a lot of people are using it to eat less pizza, right? And they aren't necessarily conscious of new habits and calories and things of that nature. And so we keep coming back to this because it's just such a big factor as it relates to the business overall. And I know probably, a third of the people on this phone call, are, using it as part of their eat form journey, and probably finding it actually to be relatively easy. We did have a thread where someone was talking about some of the side effects, and I responded with some of the things that she could have done to make the side effects a little bit different. So I think the big thing to expect is, one, as you're going into PR and AP, you gotta allow for a little bit of weight gain. Right, you got to allow for mentally some fluctuation. Yes, like our example, if you own a gym, if you work out a ton, if you're giving extreme effort and you want to work out all the time, yes, you can, make that work likely. At the same time, the reality of the situation is you don't want that to be like the template for your life. By the way, I wish I could show you guys this. I don't know what goes on with these squirrels, but we have a lot of squirrels on our deck because, we have kind of squirrel stations and bird stations. And the squirrels sometimes jump on my screens and walk on my screens like it's a Mission Impossible movie, and it's hilarious. Though it does kind of destroy my screens, but anyway. So I think that's the big thing. I think the other thing too, we'll get into a little bit more. We do have one question. I'll answer that question. Then we'll walk into what like workouts should look like, what the mentality of those workouts should look like, and things of that nature. But Becky, can you read Rebecca's questions?
Yes. She says, is there a way to determine how much I need to work out to remain weight stable while in PR? Is it simply experimental?
Yeah, it is experimental. The reason why people gain weight in PR typically is because they spend a lot of time and effort mentally and physically on the fat loss side, and they throw all their eggs in that basket, and then food starts to come back. Weight goes up a pound, and then it's like trip to fucking fill, right? And so what you have to do is you have to take that PR level seriously. So what my suggestion to you would be is to opt for a little bit more effort than you might expect. Now you do have food coming back, so you'll feel more energetic and things of this nature. But if you were getting, let's say, 8,000 steps a day, let's try and move that to 10. If you were working 3 times a week, let's move that to 4. Whatever that looks like for you, right? What I think that will do for you is allow you to mentally realize that you're in control, right? And I'm trying to think of a good way to tell this story that doesn't sound like a gambling story. But what happens, so I was talking to my dad, and he was telling me about how he went to a casino and lost a lot of money. And he kept telling me about all these things, you know, the tilt of the moon and the dealer's mojo, and it was a Tuesday at 3:30 p.m. And I said to him, Dad, it's just randomness that took effect, and the house has an edge, right? But the house has a much bigger edge, and this is applicable to you. The house has a much bigger edge when you make irrational decisions, right? And so what happens with my dad, and the reason why he ends up losing every dollar he brings, is because he, once he loses, he goes on what is called tilt. And so he just loses all his money by making irrational decisions. But that is very applicable to dieting, because what happens for most of you is you spend all this time for all these small and incremental gains. And then all of a sudden, the weight is up in one day or maybe 3 days. And then, you know, it's cheesecake and beer, right? Or whatever your version of that is, right? Where it's not working out or things of this nature. The answers are in the gray, right? And the answers are allowing for some mistakes to happen. But what I think is going to be best for you to understand it long term and understand how you work long term is to allow for yourself to make a mistake here and there, and then not go on tilt, right? And not like, you know, what's so funny, you know, I used to spend a lot of time, I think most people know that I used to play poker professionally, and whenever you're in a casino, one of the least active places in a casino is the cashier. Like, almost nobody cashes out, right? And so it's not the house edge that makes the difference. And in your case, the, you know, what your body's going to allow you to lose or not lose, right? Or gain or not gain. It's your reactions or overreactions to that stimulus that actually is the real problem, right? And there's a very real correlation. You know, like I said, I hadn't been to a casino, you know, in probably 15 years, and I went for an event that was held at a local casino recently, and I mean, as far as I knew, the casino was closed. I assumed they would be in hard times. No. They're doing the best they've ever done. And there's just tons and tons of people, and I'm just sitting here going to this concert and just amazed at how many people make an irrational decision related to something like that. Now, certainly there's a level of entertainment that probably does not exist, though if we could maybe use, like, you know, pickleball or tennis or rowing or canoeing, where those are maybe like fun activities. So in that way, maybe for some people it's entertaining to lose their money. I don't know. And obviously the appeal of, you know, winning occasionally is part of it. But I think being responsible, having good habits, things of that nature, not always fun. You know, it's not going to be a thing. I mean, I love my life and my routines, and it allows for me to, you know, be the version that I want to be. But that version has no weight number attached to it, right? If I'm 181 compared to 202, you know, yes, maybe my routines are a little bit out of whack and I need to kind of tighten them up again if I'm 202, but it's not like, oh my goodness, you know, I'm not 181, so screw it, might as well go to 232. right? Like that's not baked into my DNA. And I don't think that's baked into a lot of your DNAs, where what I think many of your defaults are just falling victim to a little bit of the too rigid, thought process. And then also like, hey, the only way that I can maintain my weight is just to work out all the time. I had a question that I asked online, how often do you work out? I could not believe how many people that said they work out twice a day. Most people said 6 days a week. I work out 3 days a week. And I certainly, I mean, some would argue I look like I work out 3 days a week because I'm not like Mr. Shredded or anything like that. But trust me, I have a pretty good life. I have a flexible life. I mean, my wife is doing this rowing challenge with a friend of hers, and like her back was a little bit tight. And she was talking about how it concerned her that her back was tight because, her active life is just so remarkable. We just love, we play pickleball together. We love pickleball. Just the idea that, like, what's going to break down that isn't going to allow her to have an active life? Like she loves her life so much that it concerns her, or she believes that there's some calamity. And what I tried to explain to her, I said, first of all, your back hurts because, you need to tighten up your form a little bit. You need to use your lats. You need to not bend near as much. But part of it is just those muscles that need to be reactivated. You need to let, whenever you have like back pain or back issues, usually what's happening is you're allowing your little muscles to do big muscle things. And so try and focus on form. But sometimes it's just getting those big muscles reactivated. And that's probably going to be the case for her. But this idea that, working out is going to somehow harm my working out, and then I'm not going to be working out more. That's like, it's some type of fallacy, but basically, it's sort of this thought process that's kind of the opposite of what it is, right? Like, will you get hurt? Probably. Will you suffer through certain things? Yes. But that doesn't mean that you won't be able to rebuild yourself in that process and stay whatever version of active. I guarantee you at 80, I won't be doing what I'm doing right now, but I will be doing something, right? And that's what I think we all have to be focused on. And I'll probably realistically have to adjust my food down, right? Because I'm probably not going to be near as active as I am at 55 and things of that nature, and that's okay, right? But I'm going to build as much muscle as possible in this process so that I can live the healthiest, longest life possible. Becky, I am seeing another question, and then I'll go into kind of the thought processes for PR.
Yes. I've been on the program for a couple of years. Is the program designed where the participant needs to be weight training consistently? I recently hurt my back and had to step back from weight training. I have been keeping up with my steps and been playing pickleball, but the weight has crept up.
So here's the thing with pickleball, your weight should not be creeping up. Pickleball is not something that is the same for everyone. Okay. So I play 2 to 2.5 hour sessions. If you're familiar with like Duper ratings or whatever, I'm a 4.0 plus. So these games are very strenuous, right? So what I would suggest, is if you're trying to get better, you got to be careful because, my back also is affected by pickleball. Especially as you're playing like these longer sessions and, muscle is breaking down and things of this nature. But you got to make sure that you have the intensity, right? Because if you don't have the intensity, there's really no reason why the pickleball should be able to control your weight way more than weight training. Weight training is more of a growth signal to your body.
I'm just gonna add something in here that this particular person happens to be reversing out of fat loss, and what she sees as weight going up, I do not see that. I see basic weight stability within a couple of pounds.
And so that's part of the narrative, right? That's what Becky's describing is what I was describing as tilt, right? Where you're making kind of these irrational thought processes that don't like equate at all. Like weight training should not be favorable for weight loss per se, right? It should be favorable for fat loss, right? Because you're holding on to muscle and things of this nature. Pickleball is cardio. You play pickleball for 3 hours a day, you've done cardio for 3 hours a day, right? And so I would ask you to examine the intensity of your pickleball. Okay, so how much weight training? I don't do a lot of weight training, just to be completely honest with you. I talk about it all the time. I do push-ups and pull-ups. I have a pretty good routine that I like. I progressively work towards different ideas, moving from three pull-ups to four push-up pull-ups and from 10 to 15 to 20 and things of that nature. But you do not need, like, for instance, there's actually some benefit. This is the concept of a deload. Right. When you pull away from weight training, that you kind of get like a newbie gains effect. So, allow your body to heal so you can get back to weight training. Maybe you were overdoing it. Let's try and not overdo it anymore. Let's get to kind of something that works for you. But I guarantee you, if you're playing pickleball with any level of intensity, you don't need to do legs that much. Right, you can really focus on because I'll just be honest with you. I squatted, I deadlifted, I CrossFitted. My calves and thighs and glutes had never looked like they look like with pickleball. It's just you're getting so much resistance because of all the squatting and all the sidestepping and things of this nature. And so, what I would sort of challenge you is start watching YouTube videos. That's what I do. That's how I went from a beginner to, 4.0 plus. And now, my wife and I just recently won a tournament and, use it to sort of challenge yourself to just consistently get better. But I would also say, like, don't become obsessive with it. Like I like the level of I'm at, but for me to get to like the next level up would require probably a level of time and effort that I'm honestly not gonna put in. I enjoy what I do. I like playing with my wife. I like playing with the groups that I play in. And then the other thing too is, we'll go and we'll play in groups with mostly beginners or people that are relatively new. And it just always reminds me that it's a fun game. And I like having that as part of, I might only do it once every 2 weeks or so, but I'd like having that actually downtown underneath the Target Center where the Timberwolves play is probably the best place for that. You see a lot more beginners and things of this nature. A lot of the people that, play higher level, I think Bonnie's on here. I believe she's a pickleball player. A lot of the higher level people, just being honest with you, they take it really seriously, almost too seriously. And when I'm playing with those people, I take it seriously too, which is why I like to play in games where I don't take it serious. Hold on 1 second. So Keep all that in mind, but definitely examine the intensity of what you're doing. You can do a lot with upper body routines, but if you're playing pickleball with any amount of intensity, you're probably good on lower body. I wouldn't say none. For me, it's none because honestly, to be a better player, you have to squat a lot. You have to really not all beginners are doing that, right? And so it is a little bit of a different game for people. Okay, so to finish things up, I mean, you could still ask questions, but I'm just going to try and get to the last part. And for some reason, I probably need some water. Hold on one second. So what I wanted to get into is a little bit of what we just talked about with that last question, right? What do my workouts need to look like? I think cardio is super underrated as it relates to weight maintenance. I don't love the concept of maintenance the way that most people think of it, where you're staying weight stable, like Becky's saying, allowing for a little bit of fluctuation mentally, physically. It's just going to be the right way to go as your calories are moving up. I think also there's this kind of like, I'm not earning my food, right? The reality of the situation is that even relatively inactive people, their total daily energy expenditure is 2,000 or more, right? And that's with like virtually no activity. So most people, we need to kind of abandon that earning the food idea. But, there's all manner of levels to this, right? You see Sarah Hoffman. That's someone that works out a lot, I think if you look at myself, I work out to stay healthy. So when I go to the doctor, I get a good result. But, and I'm not saying that, like, I mean, I think I look good, at the beach too, but probably not Sarah good looking, right? Or Sarah's good look, right? Or Sarah's look, sorry. And that's the effort thing. Right. And so don't, if you're getting mediocre results, ask yourself, am I putting in mediocre effort? All right, I'm gonna have to pause for a second because I am literally need some water here. All right, I'm back. And hopefully, well, this is about to end, so I think I should be fine. But whether it's resistance training, whether it's cardio, like try and lose the mentality of you need to run a marathon every day to maintain your weight while eating. That said, the average American, even women, eat more than 3,000 calories a day, right? And that's part of the reason why we're kind of in this predicament that we're in with obesity. And so there is a happy medium between 3,500 calories and 1,000 calories, right? And that's what we try to get all of you to know and teach you and kind of reprogram your brain with better thoughts. But as we move into spring and summer, it's just such a great opportunity to just enjoy yourself with activities that you love, and occasionally some activities. Like, I don't love my pull-up push-up routine, right? But I also know that there has to be a certain amount of muscle building, otherwise you atrophy, right? And so that's important to me. And I think it should be important to you. But what I think happens is that this weight number becomes so overwhelming to people that the overall health gets affected negatively. And so that's something that you want to stay aware of all throughout this process. But Yeah, I mean, as you go into summer, I can tell you exactly what's going to happen is when you first start, like I said, the train wheels come off and you realize you can't let that happen. And by the second or third summer of Eat to Perform, you start to realize there need to be some guardrails in place, but while you're still enjoying yourself, right? Because it's easy to go from 1800 calories as you're reversing up, and then a couple weeks of 3000 calories, weights up 5 to 6 pounds as a result of that. And then I'm going to take a break. A lot of times, what I'm going to take a break means is I'm going to undereat, but not really, right? So you end up kind of undereating 1500 to 1600 calories, and then you go off the rails on the weekends and things of this nature. So some people get it right out the gate, especially the people that come from like a calorie counting background. But a lot of people just let the rope go a little too much, right? And I just want you to be cautious of that. You've worked really hard. Allow yourself a little flexibility, allow yourself to make some mistakes. You have the rest of your life to figure this out. But you are literally talking to somebody that was 265 pounds, and I right now weigh 185 pounds, and I've weighed roughly that version, for the last 13 years now, And so I'm telling you, I'm giving you the roadmap that not only I took, but tens of thousands of Eat to Performers have taken. So just allow yourself to not be the person that is hanging on to that rope so rigidly, because that is actually part of the problem. And on another note, and once again, I don't want every single one of these to be dominated by weight loss medication, but there was an image of I think her name's Kim Guilfoyle, but we also did like a profile of Sharon Osbourne recently, or in September, and then I republished it recently. Some people are really, really using this weight loss medication for very destructive type stuff. And, there was, because she's a political person, there was someone that's on a different team than she's on, and they were making fun of her. And I was just like, seriously, like we think it's cool to make fun of people that are obviously struggling with an eating disorder and using weight loss medication to enhance that, right? I think that, what we're not seeing so far is not the things that everybody's like trying to put out there. Many of the people that have a version, they tend to have that version because it affects their life. I was listening to some stuff from Jillian Michaels, and I mean, I can't believe anybody listens to anything she says. I mean, most of what she says, she creates these arguments that aren't real arguments and aren't really the truth. She'll take something that is remotely correct and then turn it into something that it means nothing similar to that. And, specifically, one of the things that she talked about was using it for weight loss medication, and then you're stuck using it forever. And homeostasis is going to mean that you don't lose weight over time, as if you couldn't possibly get off of it, right? And this narrative that when you get off of it, you're just going to gain all the weight back, that is not what we're seeing over the course of now what is probably 1,000 people that have done it with us, right? So you have to kind of take a lot of this with a grain of salt. But man, this eating disorder part, and in the wrong hands, I just feel like so many people are not going to use it in a way. Like, for instance, if you are 400 pounds and you're not doing resistance training and you're at the highest dose and you've lost 250 pounds, but a lot of that has been muscle. Weirdly, at your highest weight, your muscle would have been a lot more and been able to kind of carry your frame a little bit. Now you're actually opening yourself up to like physical injuries, right? By this kind of all-in approach. And so start looking for this kind of stuff, you know, when you see, but when you see it, when you see some of these messages, don't default to, ha-ha, see, told you so. You should default to some level of empathy for someone that's struggling under any circumstances, right? And I think that that's really important as we start to transition to what the diet and health industry looks like. And can this be an effective part, which I believe it can, you know? But what we can't do is now all of a sudden, you know, see people dying from eating disorders related to their use of weight loss medication and then use them as like, this is the reason you shouldn't be taking weight loss medication. The cat's out of the bag, folks, right? AI's not going back, right? Weight loss medication is not going to be blown up in a lab. We've got to figure out ways to make these things work, right? And oh, by the way, you know, super exciting stuff with our versions of AI, you know, and how we've been able to use that in a productive manner for many of you. So, a little bit all over this place, the place today, which I get. I do that sometimes, but hopefully that helps. But what happens is as we're talking, all these other thoughts come into my brain, and I want to talk about those things too. And we don't always have enough time to explore those in length all the time. But appreciate everyone being here, and I'll talk to you later. And if you have any questions, just bring them up to your coach, and either Becky or I will address them as we go. Talk to you later. Bye now.